Grosvenor have reported their results for 2017, including revenue profit of over $143 million, more than doubling 2016's revenue profit for the global firm, but total return dropped more than 5%. We're here with Group Chief Executive Mark Preston to find out more about 2017's results and where Grosvenor's future lies now that 49% of its assets are held outside of the UK.
It was a good set of results this morning with revenue profit up 81%. But obviously return was down from 8% to 2.7% last year. And I was just wondering if, first of all, you could kind of explain the reasons behind that decrease.
Yes, of course. Just in case the definition of revenue profit is not clear to you, let me start with that because that'll help to explain it. Revenue profit is the rental income from our property portfolio plus fee income from third parties with whom we joint venture, for example, in development projects and so on. And then the profits from our development activity, which we sometimes call trading profits. So those are the cash profit items that we have a lot of control over. They are the subject of, you know, application of our management skills and so on. And indeed, the increase that you referred to is principally the consequence of trading profit, development profit in North America being strongly up, and also in our indirect area, and actually in the UK too, where revenue profit grew very, very strongly. I should have said, of course, that those revenue profit items then have netted off against them, of course, the costs, administration costs and so on, and financing costs associated with those activities. The total return then is that same set of returns, but added to that the movement in value of our property portfolio. And of course that can be a very big number and can often dwarf the revenue profit number. I mean, in this case, £143 million of revenue profit and £233 million of profit before tax. So actually, unusually in this year, we've got a much higher proportion of our overall profit from revenue profit. So when thinking about total return and including the movement in value of our properties, this explains why the total return is as low as it is, because values have been rather flat in 2017 in the UK, particularly in London. So those weak valuation movements have contributed to the 2.7% total return, along actually with the appreciation in sterling, depressing the returns from our overseas non-sterling businesses.
Okay, and you also made a slight loss in Europe this year as well, didn't you?
Yeah, that's right, and that's down to the really the stage in the life of that business. It transformed itself from a fund management business a little over a year ago into one of our proprietary businesses, and it inherited some losses out of the fund management activity, and also it's got to sort of get itself going on the development cycle. You can't obviously just buy a site and turn a development profit in the first year. You need to spend obviously a period of years to build that up before you can rely on some profits coming through. So it was always expected we would have a loss last year, and we'll have another one this year and possibly next year as well before that business gets into its stride, as it were.
Okay, and obviously you said in the statement this morning that it was more than Brexit constraining growth in the UK markets for the course for this year and next. Can you elaborate on this a bit further?
Sure. So, I mean, for some time now, certainly for the last 2 or 3 years, probably 4 years, we've been concerned about the elongated cycle, particularly in the central London residential sector, fueled as it has been by quantitative easing, creating this long cycle and this particular ramp up in values in property, especially, as I say, in London. So we began to make sales in 2013 in anticipation of the market cooling, which it then duly did, first on the back of the stamp duty changes 2015-16, and then of course on the Brexit vote in 2016. But when you then add to that the sort of late cycle, the stage of the cycle we're in, and the fact that we're now beginning to see the interest rate cycle turn, again, it shouldn't be much of a surprise to anybody that property values follow, or indeed don't follow. They can move in anticipation of that change, and I think that's really what we're seeing, that, you know, we've had such a ramp up in values that property markets, not just in the UK but globally, are particularly vulnerable now to a move in interest rates upwards, which is of course partly why there's so much caution being exercised in the pacing of that increase in interest rates clearly people are very, the central banks are very well aware of the potential implications for domestic residential, but it applies just as well to the commercial markets. So I think it's all those things together, really, that come to bear on the market, the particular valuation result that we had.
Okay, and do you foresee valuations being down again for 2018 and into 2019, or do you foresee kind of the market turning again in the next couple of years?
So globally, I think we're certainly in the overvalued territory, which would suggest that we can't expect anything more than fairly lackluster results again this year and possibly next. In the specific case of the London market, yes, indeed, flat-ish, which I would think not. I wouldn't say we are expecting values to fall significantly. Actually, they seem to have held up remarkably well, really, given the concerns that there are in the UK at the moment. And our own predictions for 2017 were for a poorer result than the one we had. So although 2.7 isn't anything to shout about, it's certainly better than we thought it was going to be. And part of that is thanks to the discipline exercised by the banking sector in not fueling speculative development in the way that they have in previous cycles.
And I mean, do you feel as well that obviously the limited amount of development in the West End at the moment has helped keep things buoyant?
Yes, I would say in a single word answer, certainly it has. As you'll know, particularly in the office sector, the demand is quite strong, vacancy is low, and as a consequence, rents are still under upward pressure rather than static. So the office sector is looking pretty healthy. Retail, of course, is a different story, and you'll be well aware of all the difficulties that the retail sector is going through. Our particular retail is of a different nature, typically, although we do still have some shopping centres in continental Europe. In the UK and North America, we're out of shopping centres almost entirely, and we're exposed to a very different sort of retail. And then residential, well, we've talked a bit about that already.
Okay, and obviously nearly half of Grosvenor's assets are now outside of the UK. I mean, do you plan to reduce the company's UK holdings further?
Well, we've been on a journey for many, many years now to diversify the Grosvenor Group internationally. So we've achieved a particular point, as you say, in plus or minus 1% getting to the 50-50 point. But that's just a point along the way. There's nothing about the current environment that is causing us to significantly change our allocation approach, which is to continually diversify internationally to the point where absolutely you'd expect the UK percentage to be continually dropping as it has been. But then, of course, you get a big ramp up in values like we've had in recent years, and it can go the other way for a period. So all we're really doing now is falling back to a level that we were perhaps previously at. But certainly I would expect over the long term it would continue in percentage terms to fall. But that doesn't mean in terms of the amount of money we've got exposed to this market that it won't continue to rise. It perfectly well can and probably will. And we're committed to a fairly significant amount of investment in the UK. Our overall development pipeline group-wide is £5.2 billion. I'd have to just check to be reminded how much of that is in the UK, but there'd be more in the UK than anywhere else, for sure. I can probably give you the exact breakdown, but I wouldn't want you to think we're not still committed to this market. We are long term. We clearly wouldn't have this much of our portfolio in London if we didn't believe in it long term. But you certainly, as a point along the way, the 50% threshold is an important one to acknowledge that, yeah, half our portfolio is not in the UK, and that's deliberate.
And, I mean, are there any kind of particular, obviously you've said that you're only going to kind of look at opportunities within cities where Grosvenor's already established. I mean, are there any particular areas you're targeting for further growth at the moment?
Just one point of detail. Yes, you're right in terms of our own operating businesses. We're concentrating on the markets that we've already established a presence in. But through our indirect activity, we absolutely can and will gain exposure to new markets, new cities, and that's the whole point, really, that we want to use our expertise and skills in the four operating businesses to focus on what they do best, what they know best, and where they have competitive advantages without trying to pretend that we can be everywhere with our own teams. But acknowledging that there are other sectors and other countries and other markets that we want to be exposed to, Australia being a particularly good example, and our first investment in sub-Saharan Africa last year being another, then we're very happy to back other people, third parties who've got expertise in those markets. So we can still access new markets even without setting up our own businesses. I think I would probably say that of all our markets, the particular cities that we're invested in North America, which is to say Vancouver, Calgary, San Francisco, Washington, D.C., and Seattle, would probably be the top picks. They are largely gateway cities that are performing particularly well at the moment. Domestic, at least, economic policy in the U.S. is very favorable towards infrastructure and real estate, and I think we see that cycle continuing for a bit longer yet. So I think, you know, we will be continuing to invest in those markets, probably disproportionately. Continental Europe is going through a period of quite steady and strong recovery, but we're already quite significantly exposed to those markets, so I don't think we would necessarily expect to be adding to our exposure there. Asia, we're on a continual process of growing our exposure. Tokyo probably has been particularly successful at the moment. China less so, more difficult market for us to invest in. And here, as I say, we do, despite the gradual move in favor of overseas markets, we do have a significant pipeline of opportunities here in the UK. And I could pick a couple of examples. In particular, Bermondsey would be the one I'd have to pick out first because it's by far the largest, where we put a planning application in. We have a planning application in, and hopefully we'll get that consented by the end of this year for 150 homes in Bermondsey.
And obviously, as you said, your indirect business is also looking at new cities. Obviously, you've just started a retail scheme in Ghana, and obviously you've also acquired six residential development opportunities in Madrid. Are there any, via the indirect investment route, are there any kind of other opportunities you're looking at and any other countries that you're not in that you're looking at the moment?
What would I pick out? I would say Australia is one of our favourites. We've got a couple of very good venture partners in Australia that have produced good results for us, and we will do more with them. So there are those in the pipeline. Africa was very much a toe in the water, and we weren't planning to make any further investments until we'd been able to see how that one goes. And so that's some years away before we would either say, this was a disaster, we won't do it again, or this is interesting, let's do more. So I don't think I would pick out that. South America probably is worth mentioning. We've already got exposure to Brazil through our investment in Sonae Sierra, but there are other Brazilian opportunities, and I think very probably other countries in South America that I would see us having an interest in. I think otherwise, no, nowhere else I can particularly pull out. German opportunities they're looking at, but it's very early days.
Oh, okay. And in Australia, is it mixed-use schemes you're looking at there, or predominantly residential-led schemes, or
mixed? No, I mean we've got a venture there that is focused on industrial and on office, and one of the ones we're looking at now will be on in residential. So we'll land up, if that one goes forward, we'll land up actually having exposure to all three of our major sectors.
Okay. And I'm just going to bring it back to the UK again, obviously, because Brexit is on the horizon and obviously can't be avoided. Just your thoughts on kind of the year ahead, obviously, because this time next year we may or may not have had Brexit by then.
I suppose what I would hope, rather than predict, is that indeed we will have some certainty around that time that you just mentioned, and that there is some clarity. How much we like what comes out will be another matter. But actually, I think for business, it's just important to have that clarity, because what's so unhelpful at the moment is this period of uncertainty, which is so corrosive to business confidence, you know, investment decisions being postponed, international investors beginning to worry about whether the things they liked most about the UK, its stability and its consistency and coherence, ebbing away, as it were, over time, is the thing that's most worrying about 2018, as well as last year. We clearly aren't going to get that clarity during the course of this year, but let's hope you're right in predicting we'll have it in the spring of next year. One would think so, but who knows? So I think it's the uncertainty and the lack of clarity around what the future is this year that's the problem, rather than whatever the outcome is going to be. I think, you know, we will cope as a country reasonably well with whatever outcome, assuming it's a reasonable outcome, because we'll be able to bring to bear our considerable strength in making it making the opportunities work for us. But this period is really dangerous, I think, and not helpful.
That's great. Thank you very much for your time.